Welcome to episode 184 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Red Sonja, Queen of Plagues by Gail Simone. And now, the cast begins.
Rough week for me because it's only Wednesday and I'm already like getting jealous and angry of all of the other people posting from Comic-Con.
Oh, I know.
And it's not, today's only preview night.
Let's not talk about it, okay?
David, why do we have families? I could be at
Comic-Con. Please, please. Think of how many I have.
I know. I don't know how you do it. All the things that you miss, I don't
understand. You're making me relive. I don't want to talk about it.
And now I'm friends. What makes it worse is I'm friends with the guy who, you weren't with us when we went henching, right? We went as the henchman from Venture Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
The monarch that we found that we hung out with all day is like now a professional cosplayer and he's posting all kinds of shit on his Facebook page. And I'm like, I want to hang out with you again.
Don't be his friend.
Yeah, unfriend him on Facebook. Don't look.
Well, like, at least Nick is going to try to buy me the HeroClix thing I want.
Yeah, I was about to have him just try and buy me one, too. And then I was like, but I'm just going to sell it. Who am I kidding? And then really, I'm just having him go on an errand for me. If it's not something I actually want,
I do actually want the Zombie Galactus, because I love Galactus.
Well, you guys ready to start this?
Okay.
Yes.
Did you not like the comic or what?
No, I'm fine. I'm feeling like super lazy and I have to go into the office tomorrow. So I'm just like pre-bummed out about that.
Jen, I will trade you jobs.
No.
Today.
No.
Please, dear God.
I thought you loved your job.
I did. I don't right now.
I'm going to make the worst humble brag and it's I have to go in tomorrow to go out to lunch.
Oh, well.
Please, my life is over.
Can we please change jobs? That's bumming you out? Oh my god.
It's like I have to drive a place and, you know, put on, like, not pajamas.
God damn it, Jen.
Sorry, I'm being an asshole for no reason.
Okay, buddy, welcome to another dickish episode of the Atomic Pirate Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
Hey!
And David.
Hey! Andy's angry because Jen has to eat lunch tomorrow or something. Because
Jen gets to go out to lunch. And this week, speaking of ladies, we're starting off our Comics for Ladies series with Red Sonja, Queen of Plagues, collecting issues 1-6, written by Gail Simone with art by Walter Giovanni. And this is actually interesting because this, I find it fascinating. This was a comic that I was going to put in our cheesecake arc way back when. Because Red Sonja is like one of those classic cheesecake characters. But then when I decided to do the research for this one and look up like those incredibly horrible lists of what comics should I buy to get my girlfriend into comics? Like this kept coming up. So I think it's like super interesting that this is like the traditionally cheesecake character suddenly super feminist or something. I don't know.
You know,
apparently it's the thing to get your girlfriend.
Well, so here's the thing, right? I don't know how cheesecakey this really is. I mean, she has her classic costume with the chainmail bikini.
Yeah.
But for the majority of these six issues, she's not in that. She's wearing farm clothing.
Yeah.
She's wearing like some animal skins, and then she's like full armor when she fights at the end in the arena.
Yeah.
And even the ridiculous outfit, it seems just more canonical here than, you know, lascivious. She's not flaunting anything in particular. So, I don't know, like, if you looked at the cheesecake, like, I think of tarot and, like, the like, strategically placed waterfalls and swords and snowflakes and things, and this is not like that at all.
Plus, I feel like this comic kind of, I mean, it is Gail Simone, so there's, like, some self-awareness in it.
Yeah, like, in the first issue, the twin sisters call her, oh, she of the excellent cleavage.
Ah, you stole, I was going to say that. I wanted to talk about the cleavage.
Sorry about that. But that one, it is good that they say that, though, because, like, it gets it out of the way early on. It's like, yes, they're there. Yeah, okay, it's a joke. It's funny. Let's all laugh at it and move on and get on with the story. It reminds me of, of Power Girl when she collects snow globes, and there's that frame of the two globes in front of where her breasts would be, and the guy's like playing with her collection of snow globes, and she says, "Please stop messing with my globes." It's like that kind of tongue-in-cheek, okay, yes, they're there, let's make the joke, now we can move on. Let's move on and talk about character and things that she does and plot, you know? So I do appreciate that. That was right in the first issue, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's like page 5 or something.
Yeah.
It's page 23, not page 5. Well, in the trade I got, it's page 23.
Yeah, but still right up front in that first issue, probably.
Yeah.
So, Jen, as our token woman...
You're off to a strong start, Andy.
Do you feel more objectified or empowered?
I don't know what a comic for women is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole other thing, right? I mean, there is no such thing as comics for ladies.
I mean, I'm not a she-barbarian with a sword and, you know, a lusty drinking habit. Like,
oh, queen of all fermented beverages.
Yeah, I mean, like, my drinking habit could be considered, like, mildly lecherous at best. So, it's cool that she's there, but I don't necessarily, like, think she's a role model, because nobody is like this. She's so fantastical, right?
Yeah.
And on the other hand, like, well, she's not being tarot, so it's not... I enjoyed it. It felt very, of course, Conan the Barbarian, and it is set in the same universe.
Yeah, same universe.
And, like, same people. So, like, the tonal carryover makes a lot of sense, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, we kind of saw this with Conan, where there were slaves, and then there were sad people, and then some weird, like, friendship romance gets broken up at the end, and then exile. And it felt kind of samey to the Conan trade we read. So... I don't know what I think of it in terms of, like, women or she-devils or anything of that sort. It just felt very barbarian comic to me.
Well, that's good, right? I mean, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole point should be that it doesn't matter whether Sonya is a man or a woman. And for, like, all of this story, it doesn't matter whether she's a man or a woman, right? I mean, when in this entire story does it actually matter that she's a woman?
Not really ever.
Never.
Yeah. I think the only portion, well, there's a part where she's having her flashback to her father being killed, and there's that, like, creepy guy who captures her at first.
Right. And that's what I was trying to allude to. The only time it matters when she's a woman is when she's under the male gaze within the comic.
Yeah.
That's literally the only time that her gender or sex is even brought up.
And even then, he could have just been a pedophile.
Well, then there's the
toad guy.
Toda, yeah.
Toad, yeah, okay. He's... Then,
but both of those were, I mean, those were just creepy dudes anyway.
And I think Bazrat, too. Bazrat, I think, has a thing for them.
Well, I mean...
A masochistic thing.
And he seems to be, I mean, he's the villain, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that he enslaves everybody, not just women. It's just that he treats his women like Jabba the Hutt does, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's got the, like...
The metal bikini.
Yeah, well, that's not what I was going for, but...
Well, I mean, that's what Jabba the Hutt does.
Yeah, but he, like, keeps them around nearby. Like, he has some eye candy, I guess you could call it.
Oh, just, like, having one by his side all the time.
Yeah, but he's a dick anyway. Like, you know, I don't think... He's a dick to everybody, not just women.
That's true.
Yeah. Like, I feel legitimately you could have replaced her in any scene with a dude, and it wouldn't have changed the aesthetic or the tone.
And, you know, for a lot of the instances, like, the way the art is drawn, it wouldn't matter if it was a dude. Like, for a lot of this, she's posed like a man, she fights with a sword like a man. Like, the traditional belief about sword fighting is that men are stronger and less quick and lithe on their feet, and women are weaker but have more flexibility and mobility when they fight. Except when you look at how Red Sonja's fighting, half of the time she's fighting in the masculine, super strong way. And well, we see that from the beginning, too.
She learned how to fight from a man. Like, her father taught her how to fight, right?
Yeah, and her brothers.
Yeah. So that's the only way she knows how to fight. I don't think she probably doesn't consider that there is a masculine way to fight and a feminine way. Do you know what, right?
Yeah, there's just a way to fight that wins.
And remember, like, Dark Anicia tells her at the start of the slave pit thing to change her grip on the sword because she fights like a soldier, and soldiers can predict that kind of thing. So it sounded like, I mean, I don't know if Anicia knew it or had seen it, but it sounded like Sonya had been trained in a more traditional sword fighting manner.
Yeah.
But I love that, like, that stuff, like, maybe that's what makes this a comic for women, is that there's no male gaze except for when it's, there's no male gaze from the author or the artist. There's only male gaze from characters within the comic. Which then, if you are a dude, you can see, that guy is lecherous. I know somebody, hopefully not a friend, I know somebody like that, and that person is sleazy. And as a woman, you can see that and be like, I know guys like that who are like that with me, and that's fucking sleazy. And either way, you can either empathize or relate to Red Sonja, both of which are bad things. But guys like that, I mean, are terrible people and shouldn't exist. I mean, there's a reason that the most evil character behaves that way. But it's something that you can identify from either side. Whereas, like, my example before, Power Girl, the art is still, in some instances, very much in the male gaze. Because for them, that's the joke. Is look at how much of a male gaze there is on this character. And that's a satire that you don't get if you're not a comic book person. You see that and you're like, oh, this is comic books. This is why I don't read comic books, because comic books are like this. And you don't understand necessarily that it's satire. But this, it's not even satire. It's just, yeah, she's wearing this. That's what she wears. Because it's hot in this part of the world, I guess. I don't know why she'd be wearing that necessarily.
Well, like, I was going to say something about the costumes earlier. The only women that are forced to wear, like, slinky outfits are the ones that Bazrat keeps around him, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the... What's their country called? Patra?
Yeah, Patra.
All the Patran women, like the rabbit twins and all the other, like, normal women villagers are wearing, like, normal clothing. Yeah. And when Sonya, you know, she's wearing her chainmail bikini thing at the beginning, but she doesn't wear that all the time. I mean, when it's not practical to dress like that, she wears appropriate clothing. Like, when she's in the snow, she's wearing skins and stuff. And then when she's in the arena fighting Anicia at the end, she's wearing full-on armor. Because that's the smart thing to wear in this instance.
And they both are, too. Because I was just thinking about, like Anicia's outfit is not... She's got the midriff, which is something that a lot of people, like, rail on with the way that women are portrayed when they're warriors. Like, the warrior women, like, why would you have a midriff? That's, like, stab me here sign. But at the very least, she had, like not just cloth. I think she had, like, a leather, like, almost like a leather armor top.
Yeah, it had an open stomach, but it looked like it was leather, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, well, I did...
Not for sure, but I'm pretty confident that it looks like it's supposed to be leather.
Either way, I agree with you, David. I really appreciated that at the end, when there was the big fight, that they were both in full armor. Because you're right, that makes perfect sense in that scenario. And the fact that they're in full armor makes it a fight between warriors instead of a cat fight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the thing, too, is, like, I think it would be easy to just put... You know, you mentioned that maybe she dresses in that clothing because it's hot there. But the other women don't, so I think it's just Sonya's choice. It's just her. It's her decision to dress that way, and then when it's inappropriate to dress that way, she doesn't. And so she's making choices. You know, she's making choices. Nobody's forcing her to do anything. So I think that kind of and then juxtaposed with the Bazrat's slave women, it kind of goes to show you that. It furthers the point that Sonya is making her own choices. I mean, obviously, somebody designed her costume, but she's, like, been a character. Was she like a what's his
she
name?
Was she was spun out of Conan.
Yeah, but I mean, is she from the, like, pulp novel time period, or
I don't know if she's from the comics or the novel. Is she a more recent
creation? Well, no, there is a movie. There's a Red Sonja movie from the 80s that's a spinoff from the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Because Arnold's in, it's, what's her name? Bridget something.
Bridget Bardot?
No.
She's the only Bridget I know. I know that's wrong.
She's, Bridget Nielsen. She was Flava Flav's wife at one point. Right?
Oh, maybe she could be Red Sonja and Flava Flav could be Conan.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
So, apparently the character Red Sonja first appeared in the 30s in a short story, and then was later in Marvel Comics in the early 70s.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm looking at the... Oh, she is a... Is she a Robert E. Howard character? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So anyways, So then what do we... Okay, we've established the art, and we've talked about, like, comics for ladies, is this feminist, whatever. What did you actually think of her as a person, as a character in this comic? Because this is very much her story and her carrying this. Go.
I mean, she's obviously strong. She's written to be strong, and my thing about her is that even when she's vulnerable, she doesn't really have vulnerabilities. Like, when she's sick, she puts on this face of bravery, and she acknowledges that she's doing that, too. So it's not even, like, this sense you get of someone who's sick who's just pretending to be brave but isn't. She's saying, I'm pretending to do this, which takes away kind of that sense of, I don't know, like, she's so forward about everything that there's no... I didn't feel like there was that much intricacy to her character in this comic. It was just out there. Like, and I mean, that is who she is. She's a really, like, forward character. She doesn't take shit from anybody, and she wants to always say, like, what she thinks. So, you know, when she's prepping for that dinner party, she's bitching about the dress, and she's like, this was itchy. And when she, you know, when she's sick, she says, yes, I'm sick, and I feel shitty, but I have to keep going. So, I don't know. I think when you get a really strong character, like, if you look at any of the traditional superheroes, or, like, Conan the Barbarian is a good example because he's tonally similar. Mm-hmm. Like, the characters become really interesting and engaging when they're given depth by showing, like, two contrasting sides of their personality. So on the outside, they're really strong and forward. But on the inside, you know, their hearts break at times, or they show sadness or fear. And I feel like even at the lowest points here for Sonya, there wasn't sadness or fear or any vulnerability. There was just, like, get her done. And that made the character feel really shallow to me.
Hmm.
Like, even at the end, when Dark Anicia is killed, Sonya is pissed about it, and then she's like, oh, I've solved the mystery. Right? Like, it didn't feel like there was... is grief there, just action. And that made her feel a lot less human to me.
See, but I think she's not just less human to you. I think she actively tries to be less human to other people. She knows what the image of her is, and she actively works constantly in this comic to uphold it. And even when I get the feeling that she'll catch herself doing something nice. She'll catch herself being benevolent, and then she'll turn it on her head. Like, at the very beginning, when she catches the thieves coming into her camp, she starts off with, if you need gold or food, please take it. There's not much, but you can have it, take it, and go, right? And it's a really benevolent thing to say, but it could also be seen as weak, because she's a woman, lying by the fire, not properly armored. Really easy, apparently, if you don't know who she is, to walk up and just kill her. And if you hear her say, please just take whatever money and food you need and go. Like, you could kind of turn it that way. But then she follows that up immediately with, because I'm drunk, and when I'm drunk, my aim might be off, and I'll get the blood on my horse from when I kill you. Like, even in the moments when she's being benevolent and trying to show character, I think she's hardened by her trauma to know that any show of weakness, even a little bit, will be exploited. She doesn't even want to stay anywhere near Patra, I think. And she's only really helping them to the point that it grows her legend and it grows the image of her being the devil. And, I mean, she does care about them. And I think if she saw herself in any other way, or thought that she could and have it not diminish the image of her, that she would stay with them. Maybe not as queen, but she would stay.
True, but, I mean, even if it's, like, a projected image, I feel like I need to see more that, like, even knowing it's a projection, I need to see what's underneath that to feel engaged in the character, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's important as a reader to get inside the character's head a little bit. And we get a little bit of internal narration from Sonya, but it's kind of along the lines of what Jen said earlier. It's her, like, you know, commenting on the how dire the situation is, but that she's going to push on through anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it would certainly further her character development to maybe see some private moments. I'm not really, I mean, we kind of do when she's sick and she's having the flashbacks of her father, but it's kind of like what you get from that whole sequence is that, you know, she watched her family get killed and some switch flipped in her and she became this badass warrior, you know?
Okay. Well, then how does she compare with Anicia? Because we get Sonya and we get Anicia, and I think to a certain point in time in this comic, they're the same person. Not that they're the same person and women are interchangeable, but like character-wise, they both are on the same path. And then when, what's the king's name? Demath comes in. Mm-hmm. And frees them, that's when their paths diverge. And you see one of them go in one direction and get sodden with guilt and corrupted, and the other one listens to Demoth's advice when he says, do not let the evil done to you make you who you are, and grows into this, like, legendary hero. Not even hero, really, just this legendary figure among the people. And, like, when their paths diverge, you really see who they are versus each other.
It's just kind of ironic, though, because Sonya, like, who she is predicated on the evil done to her. She's a fighter. She's a force of vengeance. She's the fulfillment of a curse. She's a devil. And she wouldn't be any of these things if she didn't have to carry out that duty based on the evil that was done. So, you know, it's interesting because they both suffer from, you know, not being able to follow that. It's just in such different ways. Anicia has, like, really deep guilt, and Sonya has, I don't know, like, it affects her to the point she has this really strong sense of duty that defies even death. So obviously, like, hers is far more positive, but there's no way, either way, that it wouldn't shape them.
And you also get the sense that, like, Anicia is burdened by the guilt of all the people that she's killed in the way that Sonya isn't. But at the end, you do realize, or it's revealed to you at least, that Anicia thought she was doing good the entire time, that she's been getting played. And so that really, they're both good. It's just they chose different vassals. And Anicia didn't actually choose hers even. She just kind of, like, happened to have to fall into it. She's, what's his name? Arthas. all stories are the same. No, they're not. But, like,
well, the thing is, like, you know, I mean, the thing that drives Sonya to become the warrior is vengeance, right? Initially. And so she becomes this force of vengeance to satisfy this urge for her to, you know, protect her village or get back at the people who did them wrong. And she succeeds in doing that almost immediately. Right.
Yeah.
So why does she? I mean, she obviously she gets captured in some way and becomes a slave. But in the time between her getting her revenge and getting captured, I mean, do we assume that she kept being like a sellsword or heroing around, like swashbuckling around the countryside? I mean, she got what she wanted, right? Why did she keep? Why would she continue this after she's done what she wanted?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Like, I'm sitting here thinking, what is Sonya's motivation in this comic? What makes her do the things that she does?
Well, so in this comic, in these six issues, the motivation is that she is returning a favor to Diamoth, right? And then Diamoth, you know, she fights for him, and then she gets tricked into thinking she gets sick, and then, you know, people call her back because they, you know, the people of Patra need saving, and the rabbit twins convince her to go back. And so she does that. So that's the motivation there. But it's like, what is her driving force, right? She just leaves at the end. You know, Anicia's killed. The twins are the queens of Patra now. And she just leaves. Like, where now what? She doesn't, does she have a motivation that's going to point her in a certain direction? Is she just, like, roving the countryside?
She's very much the wandering warrior, which I think is... I mean, I can't help but compare this to Conan in my head, which the Kurt Busiek run on Conan, he has a driving a driving goal. He wants to go to this land that he has been told is heaven. And when he gets there, he's disillusioned and he escapes with the, like, barely with his life, he escapes. And so after that, and presumably the rest of the comic, he wants to become stronger so that he can go back and make them pay for who they are and what they're doing. So, like, he as a person has a driving motive, right? And Sony here probably has one, but we don't know it yet because I think Diamat is a woman in a refrigerator. Right? Because after Sonya trains them and gets banished, why does she come back? And she even says, she tells the Rabbit Sisters, like, you guys aren't warriors, just go, right? Like, just go. And she says a couple times in her inner monologue text boxes, like, I don't know why I'm doing this. I'm doing this because I have to return a favor. I'm doing this because he did this for me and now he's gone.
Well, like, I kind of got the notion that part of the reason she went back too was because to be cured.
Yeah. It did become self-serving at a certain point.
And then I'm not saying that's not necessarily a negative thing. I mean, if you were sick and somebody was like, come with us and we'll cure you, you'd be like, hell yeah, I'll go with you.
It was to hear the lamentation of their women.
Two snakes facing each other.
Yes.
I love that. But I mean, so like, I feel like Conan had this, he also was out like searching for his fortune, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know, I don't...
Because you're right, Sonya's gotten her revenge. And at the end of this comic, Diamat, the woman in the refrigerator, has been avenged and the hero has been called to action. I mean, that's not true. Diamat is not a woman in a refrigerator. There's a handful of reasons why Sonya does what she does in this comic, and I don't think her love for Diamat and wanting revenge for her lover's murder, I'm making a joke. But, like, once she's handled the situation, Patrick, you're right, it's all tied up really, really nicely. And I think we'll see the rabbit sister twins again. I can't remember the actual name. Ayla and Nias?
Nias?
I don't remember. The rabbit sisters. Like, they, we'll see them again. They're queens, and they're on the path to becoming strong people. You can tell. Their aim is true. They're leading people. You'll see them again in this comic eventually, if the run ends up being long enough, which I hope it will. But, like, you're right. At the end of this, she kind of walks off into the sunset. And it tidies up really, really nicely, but it goes back again then into what Jen says, is then what is below the surface on Sonya? Because after she walks away, what are her motivations in life? What does she want? And I think because we don't know what she's wanted for herself personally before all this, we don't know what she's leaving to search for still, or even necessarily what about this experience has solved that want. You know, like, you can walk off into the sunset if the experience you just had has, like, sated whatever need you had in your life before you had that experience. But I don't think her time in Patra and doing all of this has brought her significant closure on anything, except for what happened to Anicia. But even then, I don't get the sense that before this she was out looking for Anicia or concerned about what happened to Anicia. Like, just, I was with her in the pit, we fought together, and when we gained our freedom, I went one way and she went the other, and that happens.
I think that it's a very common character trait in, like, the heroic barbarian fantasy genre that characters just kind of do their thing because that's their nature. Like, for instance, before Conan had his whole, like, you know, slave drama, he was just going around being like, I'm a barbarian and I kill guys. And I feel like that's Sonya's thing too. It's just in their nature to fight. They are soldiers. They, like, as Dimoth said, you know, we do not want to die as weak old women. We don't want to die in bed. We will die, you know, like, fighting. And I think if you're going to die fighting, you need to live fighting. Because you're not just going to live, like, a quiet and peaceful life on a farm or something and then suddenly engage in, like, a heroic battle and get killed. It becomes a lifestyle. And, like, this is actually something I'd like to explore more just in the genre, because I obviously haven't read enough to come across anything different. It sounds like a lot of these characters, like Conan and Sonya, and then... I'm thinking of, like, some 80s fantasy movies where I can't actually name them. You know, like, roving bands of heroic people go around and just... Yeah, Xena. Doxer the Mighty. with Gabby by his side. They just, like, fucking go around and stab people, and this is, like, that's all the explanation that you need, and there's nothing more to it than that. Like, that's the driving force, and I feel like we're supposed to take that at face value. And I'm sure that there are things that are much broader than that, and I'm oversimplifying. And even if we look at that Conan trade we read, like, we get him like that at the start, and then by the end, it's like, you know, a tearjerker. So, but the whole point of that ramble was maybe Sonya is supposed to be that simple. I don't know if we have to like that. I don't think I like that, but...
I don't think that this is all there is to her. We just don't see it here. It's not shared with us. I feel like there's more to her somewhere under there. We're just not privy to that information.
We need to read more issues.
Yeah.
Because I agree with David. Like, it's not just that she wants to fight, right? And that she wants to wander around and fight. Because if all she wanted to do was fight, she could have become the Queen of Patra and waged war against how many other opponents with an army at her back. Like, she could have had way more battle than what she has here. So, like, there's some reason that she doesn't want to... Not like, it's not that she doesn't want to settle down, but that she doesn't want to tie down to a specific location. She has to be out looking for something or wanting something. Because if not, if it really is just, you know, don't want to die old women, then become queen and wage war against the evil empires around you. And do it in a way that is honorable. Because that's another big theme in this comic, is fighting honorably and living honorably. Like, Diamoth is the far end of the good spectrum in this book, because he doesn't just live honorably, he gives other people the opportunity to also live honorably. So he's not just doing it for himself, but he then also gives other people the same chance that he has. But, like, at the other end of the spectrum, we get Tiath and Bazarat, the prince and what empire was he from? I don't know. The Bazarat.
Oh, Zamaron?
Yeah, Zamaron King, yeah.
I kept thinking, because, like, you know, Zamarons and Green Lantern. Anyways.
Like, those two are evil, not because they murder people. Like, Anesia kills tons and tons of people. Innocent people. And the Merman killed tons and tons of innocent people. But I don't think in this comic either one of them are necessarily evil. Anesia does those things, but she does it out of guilt and insanity and having been tricked. And
well, the mermen are mercenaries.
Yeah, yeah. The mermen, I feel like, maybe not have been tricked, but, like, they're humanized left and right. You know, you get the little scenes of them, like, joking about, you know, oh, if we're fish people, you know, like, them getting mildly racially offended at the stew reference joke, like, yeah. You know, like, they're humanized left and right in here, in little moments that make you laugh with them. So I don't think they're supposed to be evil, and I don't think they are evil. I think you're right, David. I think they're cell swords.
They're working.
Yeah, but Tiath and Bazarat are evil, not just because they're killing people, but because they're being tricksy, and they're doing things dishonorably, and they're making people kill for them. They're not fighting their own fights, especially Tiath.
Well, you even pity... Tiath is the son, right?
Yeah, like, the prince.
Yeah. So. Yeah, yeah, I kind of... I mean, I don't think that... I think he could have done, like, so much better with his life, and he's a shit character, but you kind of pity him because daddy didn't love him.
You pity him.
I don't pity him. I don't pity him that
No?
much. No.
I feel a little bad for him because it was, like, when he stabs Anesia, he says something like, maybe my dad will finally love me, and it was just like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, this guy.
Well, that's him and his unresolved daddy issues, and that might be what made him get evil, and that might be then the only, that's also then the one bad thing about Diamoth, which we don't see because Sonya doesn't value it, and this comic is all from Sonya's perspective. So if you are not a warrior, brave and honorable and true, then you are not a good person. And that's kind of the brush that she paints over the world that we're shown. But Tiath becomes evil when he creates this poison, poisons a bunch of people in a strategic manner. Like, he does become evil. But you're right, he could have been, for all we know, the very first scientist in this world. Like, Sonya calls him
the first mad scientist.
Well, yeah, not just a mad scientist. He talks about, like, coagulation and leeches and, like, these things that were early medicine. He could have been a great healer. That potential was in him, but it was squashed because of because of the lust for glory and honor. So I do like that little subtext in this comic of, like, yes, these people are great, but they're also jocks who picked on this really smart kid and made him evil. Like, if you want to find that in this comic, it's definitely there.
Yeah, I guess I could agree with that. I mean, I guess I see where you're going.
Or, yeah. I don't know. When I was reading, I was like, you know, we do get this all through Sonya's eyes, and Diamath is awesome for sparing Sonya and Anesia and giving them food and clothing and cutting their hair and sending them out into the world with some money. Like, he is awesome for doing that. But those people were strangers, and if this is really how he treated his son, that's not great either.
Yeah, and you get the sense that, I mean, I think some of the very first things that we hear him saying are against his son, you know.
Yeah.
He says, oh, was he valorous? And I mean, this is always the case with, like, new medical breakthroughs and things. People are like, you're a weird and crazy guy doing experiments, and the guy doing experiments is like, it's science. And it's just really, like, you get the sense that Tiath could have been, like, a great guy in a different world, but this is Sonya's world, where it's not science, it's witchcraft, and you do battle, and there's no glory in thinking.
Yeah. Right?
There's no glory in being a philosopher or an artist or a scientist. And I think, you know, it's kind of in part showing us how rough that world is, and thus how rough Sonya's life is. But at the same time, I don't know, I feel bad for Tiath's situation. I don't like him. I'm just like, this guy... Yeah,
but stop defending him, Jen.
he's pitiable where Bazaret isn't. And you get the sense Tiath's maybe just looking for recognition. He's looking for somebody to finally recognize his talents and abilities, and Bazaret did. His own father didn't, but Bazaret did. And I don't want to... The father replacement, let's not get Freudian, but, like, that's important. That's just, like, before we started the show, I was bitching about work, and sometimes at work, I feel like I'm not appreciated. And if somebody came over to me and said, hey, I appreciate your talents, why don't you come work for me? Maybe even for the same pay, but at least we'll appreciate you. Never mind that we happen to be international evil conglomerate. Like, I would be tempted. I work for a nonprofit, and I like working for a nonprofit. But, you know, like, I can relate a little bit to Tiath, like, just looking for somebody to appreciate what he does. You know, and in that sense, he's not so much evil as just pitiable, and pitiable people also in this world don't really have a place because they're weak. Kind of all goes back into that. Are you strong or are you weak? Might makes right.
I think that's certainly true in this world.
Yeah. Well, maybe not the Rabbit Sisters. But they get stronger throughout this. Like, they become way more competent.
They want to be mighty.
Yeah. They see the value in being mighty.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either. We'll just have to get Gail on the show and explain it to us.
Get on that, Andy.
Okay. I'll try. I'll just take some time off work if they don't appreciate me. You guys want to talk about the art for a little bit? Other than, sure, like, the posing and stuff. I really, really like the art in this.
Yeah, it's great. I was skimming through it again, and the part where Sonya's getting, like, that gown put on her, the look on her face is like, oh my god, get this shit off of me. It's like such a great facial expression.
Oh my god, the covers.
Yeah.
Are so amazing.
Oh my god.
Did you guys have the, so I got my trade from Comixology. And in the back, it has a bunch of alternate covers, like variants. There's a bunch of variant covers, there's one artist named Stephanie. It's loading. Stephanie Buscema, and her. I think those are great. They remind me of, like, Genndy Tartakovsky style art.
I want to look that up.
Like Samurai Jack and Dexter's Lab, and they're really fun pictures, and so are the Agnes Garbowska covers.
She's got that really, like, cartoony kind of style.
They're like anime looking ones. They're really cool. Like, she's riding the rocking horse. Do you guys have that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like the Stephanie Buscema covers. Those are really cool. But I mean, the art, like you said, Andy, the art throughout this comic is excellent. It's just really good. I mean, I say this often when for art that I really like, but the facial expressions are so good, and they convey emotion really well, that makes me enjoy the art. even more so.
Yeah, yeah. And I just, God, these covers. I'm like scrolling through like the current issues too, and they're all just, the ones that aren't like gorgeous art are super fun.
There's a Fiona Staples cover where she's like kneeling over some skeletons and there's like some ravens flying around.
Oh,
that one's awesome.
Did you see the Amanda Connor one?
Ooh, no. Nice. Which one's the Amanda Connor one?
I think she's reclining by the campfire. That one's really good, too. They're all good.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're so good.
The Nicola Scott one is really good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are, some of these are just really fucking good.
You know, we talked about, I mean, there's a lot of these cover artists are women. I'm just like, it just occurred to me right now,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting because, you know, we're talking about how this is a comic for girls? Is it under the male gaze, you know? And, you know, these are female artists drawing her in all kinds of different ways, you know? So.
Yeah. And I think it, if you look at all the covers and if you look at the art throughout this too, it sends you a really resounding message of it doesn't matter what the character's wearing. Because a lot of popular media and people who talk about comics and people who are just kind of casually interested in comics, they'll complain about the way female characters are drawn, how they have the same body type, and how the outfits are ridiculous, right? I don't know how many different times I've seen posts on Tumblr complaining about how Power Girl couldn't fly in that, how Wonder Woman's thing would fly off, like how it doesn't make sense. The costumes are, you know, like all this and that. And like, of course, there's like, you know, I've even ranted about like bikini armor and stuff before. And, you know, all that does matter. But I think the resounding point we get from this art on the covers and on the inside is it matters more how they're posed and what their face is. Because Red Sonja doesn't ever have a come-hither look on any of these covers or in any page in this trade. She doesn't have a come-hither look. She doesn't have a sexy look. She's not a sexy character. Nothing about her really seems to want to crave that. She wants to murder people. She wants to murder people efficiently and well. Yeah.
Some people might find that sexy.
Right, but like that's not... Some people find that sexy, but that's not what Red Sonja wants. And Red Sonja's...
Right, yeah.
And that she's drawn in a way that is consistent with her character. She's drawn fierce, and she's a fighter. And she's not ever objectified in a way in this comic that she wants to be. The only time she's ever objectified in here, both in the way she's drawn and the way she acts, is when somebody within the comic does it to her. And those people that do it are evil. And so I think... We talk about this in the context of comics for ladies. I don't think this is a comic for girls. Because
no.
This isn't a comic I would give to my wife. Mostly because I don't think she would like an adventure comic. Has nothing to do with feminism, female characters, female creators, female artists. Has literally nothing to do with that. It just has to do with the fact that she wouldn't like a comic book like this. I think she'd probably like a comic book more like next week or the week after. And so far, of all the comics I've given her, the one she likes the most is Long Halloween, because she loves crime shit. And I think that Red Sonja reinforces that point that you'll like this comic if you like adventure comics, and has nothing to do with the boobs or the bikini armor or sexiness or male gaze. It doesn't have anything to do with that. It just has to do with, do you like adventure comics? Because here's somebody kicking the shit out of people. And it carries through the art consistently.
You know, Jen, you mentioned last week that you wanted to ask me, as a father with a daughter, would I give this comic to my daughter? And I'm going to echo what Andy said. And if she is into the sword and sandals, sword and sorcery, whatever you want to call this genre, then I would give this to her. I would give it to her alongside Conan, you know, as examples of good versions of this genre. But I wouldn't say, oh man, this comic's so empowering to girls. You need to read this, Dahlia. My daughter's name is Dahlia, by the way, if any listeners out there. So to answer your question, would I give this to her? Yes, if this is the type of thing that she was interested in, certainly. I certainly would.
Would you also then give this to your son?
Yeah.
There you have it.
Jen, would you give this to your wife?
Would actually, would you the sort of woman who would read this comic? Probably. Yeah, yes. See,
like, okay, so would I give this to my wife? I don't know. If I thought it was a super amazing comic and I was like, oh man, this is the best, you should read this, I would show it to her. Would she actually read it? I don't know. She's not that into comics, so
yeah,
probably not.
So, but that's the thing too, is this comes up on a list of comics that also is like, do you want to get your girlfriend into reading comics? Buy these. And I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. Well, see, okay. Like, I think the problem with that list is that it assumes that your girlfriend wouldn't necessarily like comics that are good in general.
Yeah, or just that
specific things.
Or yeah. That your girlfriend doesn't like comics or has an aversion to comics, and you have to convince her to get into comics, which then you're immediately starting on the wrong foot. You don't have to convince her to get into comics. You just have to convince her to read the kind of story she already enjoys, you know? And if your girlfriend, wife, whatever, isn't into adventure comics, handing her Red Sonja will not help.
Yeah.
You like, know, it is an issue with the medium. And I actually have, like, this weird story. I taught Mouse in a, like, freshman critical thinking class. And I had a student tell me, you know, like, oh, I don't like comics. And I was like, okay, well, why? And it's a girl. So I'm thinking, like, okay, you know, this will be an interesting answer. She goes, this was, like, the most interesting answer I could have hoped for. She goes, I don't like reading things with art. And I'm just thinking, like, you know, this is hitting the nail on the head. Because if you don't like the medium, you don't like the medium. My boyfriend does not read comics. It takes, like, significant pressure to get him to read anything. And I don't know if he dislikes reading things with art. I don't think that's the case, per se. But it's just this idea of comics for girls is so insane. Because what is for girls? Does it presuppose that you're, like, the geeky girl trope? The type who doesn't listen to Beyonce or watch The Bachelor, and maybe you have, like, an alternative outfit and spend a lot of time on Tumblr? Is it for, like, the ditzy wife, you know, who spends more time getting manicures than reading, you know, or than watching superhero movies? I don't know. Like, this is obviously a marketing term, but who the hell is it targeted at? Like, because what happens is, okay, any marketer is going to find a target audience, but then when you start grouping them like that, and then it becomes a cultural trope to say, like, here's our group, you enter into some really insane territory, because it's like, well, what is for women? What is for men? And most products, like tampons are for women, you know, no shit, but most products, like, aren't gonna have that simple divide.
Yeah.
So, like, when you're selling things like this, it's mind-boggling to me. It's like you guys said, like, that's making the assumption that a lady just wouldn't like a good comic. I really hate this idea that women are told that they shouldn't like comics, therefore they don't read them. I don't think that idea holds water. I think a lot of it has to do with peer groups and friends, what your friends are doing throughout your childhood, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't think of a single person I know who is a woman who has not read comics because she was told comics aren't for girls. And that's what this idea, I think, that there are comics for women in part presupposes. It's weird. What even?
Well, I mean, when I hear the phrase comics for women or comics for girls, I think of, like, something that doesn't exist. Like a comic book cover covered in pink stuff.
My Little Pony, I guess?
Yeah, probably something like that. That's a comic for girls. But that's also for younger girls, generally. Younger girls and men in their mid-40s.
Yes.
But, like, that gets into an age-gender thing, too, right? Because then you're like, well, at younger ages, boys and girls tend to gravitate towards more gender-identified objects. Or what they perceive as more gender-identified objects. And we don't know if that's a social construct or something that tends to be ingrained. Kind of figuring out, it's kind of half and half, more social than genetic. But generally, you do come with a genetic predisposition for your own gender, the same way you come with a genetic predisposition for people that are in your family group, like the reason you're scared of other people. But, like, that's for girls. Like, we're looking at comics for women, like somebody in their 20s, 30s, you know? Like, at that point, you should just like a good story, you know? It kind of makes you think, like, the only movie a woman's going to go see in the theater is a chick flick.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the only time women go to the movie theater. They don't want to go see Thor. Why would they want to go see Thor? I'm like, oh, because it's an awesome story. Oh, yeah, that's why. Like, come on. And the best example, whenever somebody says, like, for women or for her, the thing that comes into my mind, it's the stupidest thing. If you go on Amazon and you search for Bic Crystal for Her Pen.
Oh, yes.
Have you seen these?
Mm-hmm.
There are 2,000 reviews for these pens, and they're just like normal Bic pens, like a dude would buy, except they're filled with like glittery pastel colors, right? And the reviews on them are hilarious.
Don't they just write like normally too? No, like it's just they, black ink, right?
It's black ink. They just have like...
Oh, is it just black ink?
They're
like pastel colored plastic.
Oh my God.
Yeah, plastic shiny.
So the most helpful review, I'll go ahead and read it. It says, someone has answered my gentle prayers and finally designed a pen that I can use all month long. I use it when I'm swimming, riding a horse, walking on the beach, and doing yoga. It's comfortable, leak-proof, non-slip, and it makes me feel so feminine and pretty. Since I've begun using these pens, men have found me more attractive and approachable. It has given me soft skin and manageable hair, and it has really given me the self-esteem I needed to start a book club and flirt with the bag boy at my local market. My drawings of kittens and ponies have improved, and now that I'm writing my last name hyphenated with Robert Pattinson's last name, I really believe he may someday marry me. I'm positively giddy. These smart men in marketing have come up with a pen that my lady parts can really identify with.
Wow, that's like an identical review to what I gave to Frank Miller's Batman.
Oh, God.
You know what's funny, though, about...
fucking hated that comic, mind you.
If you look at the, like, official description, like, don't read the reviews, but the official description at the top on Amazon, there's a list of bullets, and the first two bullets are elegant design, just for her, and thin barrel to fit a woman's hand.
I know plenty of women who have hands bigger than me. I think my wife is among them. Like, wait, what are you doing? What is this?
The more and more I read, like, marketing towards women, the more and more I'm convinced that I'm actually a man and no one has told me. Like...
Maybe someone marketed your gender to you.
Yeah.
Well, maybe Red Sonja is actually a man and nobody told us. I mean,
did you see an Adam's apple in the yard anywhere?
Well, I didn't see a dick. I know that. I mean, look, Jen, we live in the Bay Area. There's a lot of really good cross-dressers around here. That's all I'm saying. And Adam's apple is not necessarily a dead giveaway.
True, true.
I've seen plenty of old Asian women with one and young men. Could be either one. Who knows?
Oh, man.
There are some pretty hilarious reviews. Anyways, we're totally going on a tangent now. Yeah. I think probably this is a good time. I think this is a good signal that we should rate the comic.
I agree. And I think because you brought it up, you should go first.
Okay, I'm going to give this a 3.5. I did enjoy this comic. Like, as far as a comic went, it was a good comic. And I think that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that this is an air quotes comic for women. I think it's a good comic because Gail Simone writes good comics.
Yep.
So I will say this. If you like Conan and Sword and Sandal / Sword and Sorcery type comics, give this one a read. If you like Gail Simone and you're a fan of things like Secret Six, read this comic. I think this is going to be a tough arc because I think we're going to find that there isn't really such a thing as comics for women.
No, that's spoiler. That's what we're going to decide every week.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyways, 3.5. This is a good comic. It's not like the most super amazing thing I've ever read, but I would definitely recommend this to people who I felt would enjoy this comic. So 3.5.
Okay, I'm going to go next. I came into this wanting to give it a 4.5, and I'm going to give it just a straight 4. I wanted to give it a 4.5 because I love sword and sorcery stuff. I really do. And when Sonya starts dropping names of empires that I remember getting name dropped in Conan, it makes me want to read all of Conan and all of this and like get super into this world. And I've got a couple Conan novels on the shelf that I bought super cheap at a thrift shop that I really want to read. And like, I love this shit. I really do love it. And this is really good sword and sorcery, especially the like subgenre of sword and sorcery where it's like a lone traveling warrior, you know? There's another subgenre where it's a warrior and a companion, which is Xena, and there's like a group, which is Lord of the Rings or Legend of the Seeker, like that kind of stuff. But this subgenre, this Red Sonja comic's a really, really good example of a lone warrior traveling around, like not like the skill sword, but just like it's the sword and sorcery equivalent of the lone ranger and the lone samurai. Like, this is a really good example of that same kind of genre. And mm-hmm. I think the only thing that's missing in this first one is the overarching drive for the character. I know Sonja has one. She has to have one, or she would not have left Patra. Because if she doesn't, at the end of this, it's all wrapped up with a neat bow, and there's no reason to buy issue 7. Other than that, I want to read more Red Sonja. And I do. The other reason I want to bump it up is because we're laughing about all this feminist stuff and how it shouldn't matter, but the truth is it does, and it's really, really hard to find comics with a strong female character like this that isn't objectified. It's really hard. If you go into a comic book shop, the covers look great because they hire really good cover artists, but that Catwoman cover's not too far gone. I think you guys know which one I'm talking about. Who drew that one? Crap, I don't know. But you can tell they're like, we want an overhead shot of Catwoman where you can see her boobs and her butt. And like, she basically doesn't have a spine, you know? And it's like, that was only a couple of years ago. And there was a giant backlash for that. And I think the comics industry is growing and evolving quickly in the last handful of years to include comics like this one and characters that are written and drawn like this. But I gotta give Gail Simone credit for diving headfirst and saying, what is the most, she might not have actively done it, but you can almost get a sense like, what is the most objectified character I can get my hands on and write? Like, let me flip through a catalog of comics and find the most sexualized, objectified, male-gazed character and see what I can do with it. And bravo, Gail.
Maybe Gail needs to do the next run on Tarot.
No, David, because Tarot is perfect. It's perfect. Oh, okay. Just as it is.
Did you guys read the introduction to the trade?
Oh, no, I have the singles.
Oh, okay. She actually writes about how she ended up, getting into Red Sonja as a child.
Oh, yeah?
So when they approached her and said, we'll let you do any one of our comics, Red Sonja was their first suggestion, and she was like, yes, that one.
That's awesome.
I guess, yeah, she had always wanted to write it because I guess it had been like a long time connection, which is super cool.
That's fucking mm-hmm. sick. That's cool. I'm going to go read that intro. I'm going to go find it somewhere and read it. Anyway, Jen, what did you wrote your rating?
So I was originally going to give this a 3, but the more and more I think about it, the more I'm just like, eh. So I feel bad because I really do love Gail Simone, but I'm going to give this a 2.5 because I was just, I don't know, like, it was neat, the art was excellent, and the story was, it was there.
And I feel like this isn't your genre.
No, and, well, it is, I mean, I like it, I really, really liked that Conan trade we read.
That Conan trade was really good. That's some of the best sword and sorcery I've ever read.
I feel like I can watch, like, millions of episodes of this genre on TV. I was like a really hardcore Xena fan back in the day. Xena was awesome. So I love, you know, the heroic fantasy, like sword and sandal type adventure. Maybe it's the medium. Maybe I do like it better on TV, and that's the issue. I don't know. There was something here that I just wasn't engaged. I have no desire to read further. And that bums me out because I love Gail Simone and I thought the art was gorgeous. So maybe this is more an issue with me. Maybe I'm not a woman. No.
Didn't this come up a couple weeks ago when you actually had a beard like me and I was going to Photoshop a picture? I got to do that. Sorry,
dropping all these hints. I just, like, the more I think about it, the more it feels. So I just don't have a drive to read any more of this comic. It was good, but it felt very, very average to me. So 2.5.
You know, I've been subscribing to this comic since it first came out, and this is the first time I've read any of them. And I'm not going to lie. I've complained before about how they create a million different variant covers and they get jacked up in price and it's like artificial scarcity and how variant covers are terrible things, except even if this comic takes a nosedive in quality, if the comic if the covers are still good, there's so many good variants. I'm going to just keep buying them. There's a couple of these issues. I have multiple copies of the same issue just because I like the cover so damn much. And I like delude myself thinking someday I'm going to frame it and put it on the wall, like have the cover artist sign it. But I know I won't. It's just so pretty on the shelf. I can't help but buy some of them.
So, Andy, let me back up for a second. You said you've been subscribing to this since it first came out, and this is the first time you've read it?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify that that is what you said, because that's insane.
Because this has been out for like a year, right?
I don't know how long this has been out.
I do that, though. I'll subscribe, and I'll collect 6 to 8 comics, like single issues, and then I'll read them all in a go.
You know, actually, that's... I can't really say that. I can't really give you too much grief because I've been subscribing to Miracle Man, and I read the first one, and I haven't read any of the other ones yet.
See, the only problem with my... Because I really do prefer trades, but I don't like waiting for them, you know? So, like, Red Sonja, I don't know if a trade's coming, and I don't want to buy the first trade that comes out if it ends up being collected in Omnibus, and I'd rather own the Omnibus. Like, I don't want to get caught in that kerfuffle. So I buy the singles. The only problem is then if I don't like it, I'll end up with like 8 to 12 issues of something I just don't like. And then I might get a 13th before I can get into the store and say, please cancel. Anyway, that wraps up this week. Next week, we're going to move on from Red Sonja was our representative trade for like feminism, objectified characters. Like if this is comics for ladies, if your girlfriend or wife is a bra burner, get her Red Sonja kind of a thing. Next week, we're gonna go on to the traditional cape comic that is a Tumblr darling, I'll say. Not like Red Sonja isn't. And it's going to be Captain Marvel in Pursuit of Flight, collecting issues 1 to 6 of Kelly Sue DeConnick's run on the title. And it's the first one of hers. It recently got renumbered, starting at number 1 again, but this is the first one when she first took over the title. It's the trade titled In Pursuit of Flight. If you get confused about which one we're talking about, I don't think that one's going to be collected in trade by the time we record and put this out. But if you're confused, just go to our website, www.apsupercast.com. On the right, click on the button that says Future Shows, and there'll be a list of everything we've got coming up. I think we have up to episode 199 mapped out on there. I'm not certain if it's up yet. I don't know. But we've got a long reading list, so you can read it with us, or you can scroll ahead. And actually, if you have a suggestion for what you would like us to read coming up, go ahead and send us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
Plus, there's all the social media stuff, twitter.com/APSupercast, facebook.com/APSupercast, and the aforementioned APSupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
All right. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.